Hey, what's happening? This is Lee on lifeisawesomeness.com. This is podcast episode 2. We have a very special guest joining us for today's podcast. We have an amazing individual and one who is well-respected, well-known in the Hmong community. He is currently the head coach for Black Venom football team. Please welcome Sid. Sid, welcome to lifeisawesomeness.com. We actually are very excited to have you on the podcast. Can you give us a quick background about Black Venom?
Yeah, thanks for having me, first off. Happy to be here. Black Venom flag football team. We're based out of St. Paul, Minnesota. We have guys ranging from 16 years old up to guys, late 20s. A lot of guys have played flag football for, 10 years. Some guys, it's their first year. And their first tournament was in 2006.
Okay.
In the spring of 2006. The team was, it was built mainly of Harding High School students at the time. We all attended school together. At that time, I was actually playing on a different team. I was on our family team, Mid-Coast. But all my buddies put the team together, Black Venom. The team was put together by some upperclassmen, Ku, James, Chang, and Johnny Appleseed. They're the founding fathers of the team, and we've been together ever since.
That's super awesome. Like, a lot of accomplishment that you guys have had in the past years. And can you give us like a little glimpse of like just some of the major milestone that you guys have accomplished as a team?
First off, there's been plenty of years where there were, not too much to be happy about. But of course, through all the ups and downs, as long as you stick together, sooner or later, success will find its way. We didn't really, get over that hump until maybe like 2009, 2010. And that was even before my time. Once they got over that hump and, started to win some games that they normally would have lost, they finally talked me into coming in and helping them get the monkey off their backs. And we were able to, for the past, I've been coaching Black Venom since 2011. Since then, we've won 5 Memorial Day tournaments.
Wow.
Okay. The first one was here in Minnesota. The next 3 were in Green Bay, and then another one in Minnesota here. We've won 2 July 4th tournaments, 2012 and 2014, and that's the epitome of Hmong flag football. And when we say Hmong flag football, it's the entire Asian community. And, it means a lot. Guys show up year after year trying to win this, and we've done it twice. We've been blessed. And we've also won the past 5 Labor Day weekend tournaments. I believe they're all in Green Bay. One in Oshkosh we won. And those 3 weekends are the biggest weekends of Hmong flag football there is. And we've been pretty fortunate. But, yeah, those are some of the major accomplishments.
And you guys have also flown to, like, other states, too.
Yep, true. Yeah. Thanksgiving 2012, we flew the team out to Michigan for their Hmong New Year there. And we kind of took them by storm. We showed up with maybe 13 guys. Wow. Really, only maybe 10, 11 players. And we put on quite a show there. We won a lot of the fans over. They were actually rooting for us at the end of it.
Wow, that is so cool.
And then just this past Thanksgiving, we went down to Sacramento for their Hmong New Year. And we were able to come out on top. And that was definitely a long-term goal we've set. And we were glad to have got that out of the way.
Yeah, no, I think it's amazing. I mean, I think one of the things that I see kind of like one of the trends that as a team, you guys are pretty consistent, I mean, winning 5 Memorials, flag football championship, going to, 2 of, the July 4th championship, the 5 Labor Day, going to Michigan, taking their trophy, going to Sacramento. Like, That's pretty awesome, dude. I have to tell you, I mean, when I look at that, I'm like, not a lot of teams are able to do that, you know? Like, not a lot of teams are able to really, like, go in and be that consistent. Like, you see maybe one team might win it a year, the next year, like, something fall off. Well, from, you talked about being a player, and then kind of, like, transitioning into a coach. Like, that's very, to me, that's very different. And also, it's very difficult, you know? Like, I can't, when you become a player, you're more or less a team player, individual contributor to the team. Mm-hmm. But when you step and become the head coach of a team, I mean, this is, like, totally, like, 180. Like, can you kind of give us the transition from a player to a coach?
Yeah, it definitely was not easy. I definitely had to teach myself how to read, like, pro-style playbooks. You know, taught myself how to learn different philosophies and schemes that other college and pro coaches had. And the reason why was because if I could teach myself that, then I felt I would be credible to teach, you know, my players. So, you know, coming in as a coach, I felt like I was just a regular player, just the voice on the sideline. And it wasn't until we had a couple of, just one tough loss. That's when I kind of had to switch my mindset and be like, I want to do it. I have to do things my way. I have to teach it my way. And, you know, it wasn't until going through some tough times before I fully accepted the role and took that role on as labeled the coach. I hated the term. I would have hated to be a player with the team with the coach. But, yeah, I think having to kind of reteach myself football, and that really helped the transition.
Oh, very cool. No, I always see, like, it's tough, especially coming from, like, you know, an individual mindset. Being a coach, there's a lot that's coming at you. Mm-hmm. I mean, not just the game alone, but you have, like, personnel, you have a team, like, you know, all these different stuff that usually comes to you being a coach. And, honestly, I believe that when you have a great team, there's always a great leader or a great leadership within the team. Can you talk a little bit about leadership among Black Venom?
That's where it begins. It begins with leadership and, you know, who's willing to accept their roles and listen to someone, you know, more knowledgeable. And a lot of times you have to leave your ego aside, you know, and whether you have to take a step back or you have to step up and say something where others won't say, or do something that others won't do. You know, we have a lot of character guys who are willing to do that. It helps that some of the original guys from back then, they were all varsity players. When they came in, they didn't have to. They had all the terminology down. They knew what direction they wanted to go, and it was easy for them to teach. And those guys, you know, really made the difference. And every year, it's like we keep adding guys who already had some sense of experience within certain systems, and they come in and they just learn our way, our terminology. And it's like our, you know, our guys at the top, you know, it's easier for them to coach them up. Leaders are on the team are, for example, with us, we have Mike, my quarterback, Johnny Appleseed, my offensive lineman, probably one of the better offensive linemen to have played. I have Yi, aka Wild Rice. He's on defense. We have a handful of guys, but those three guys, it's like the team would break their backs for those three guys, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like, and we know that whatever they say, whatever they do, it's in the best interest of the team. It's for the better of the team, and those three guys are kind of like the generals. And everyone else is, you know, they just get information, they're soldiers, they just, you know, whatever the leaders say, you follow. And you know that right or wrong, you support them because, you know, they'll put you in the right place to be successful.
Awesome. No, that's incredible. I mean, it's also great to hear. I mean, having such, like, a leadership team, mm-hmm. Really like, you know, taking charge, being true leaders on the field makes a big difference, yeah. You know. And I guess more question about, so we talked a little bit about, like, Black Venom, kind of the football history of it. Can you talk a little bit about, like, your history? Like, when did you start getting into, like, you know, football? And what was, like, your true beginning?
I'm your normal sports enthusiast. You name whatever team sports I follow. I followed it my whole life. And I actually didn't pick up football till a little later on. I actually loved basketball and soccer and baseball. But football was where something where I could actually play and I could use my mind. I could use the mental aspect as leverage for me to make up for lack of speed, lack of size, height, or whatnot. Mm-hmm. And football was something that came natural. I played defense. So it's like, it comes down to mind games. And it came natural to me. And that was me as a player.
How was your journey with, like, Midcoast? You mentioned, like, a little bit playing with
Midcoast. Yeah, it was a team. We were a team full of just based of family members. Mm-hmm. A lot of cousins, nephews, in-laws, and whatnot and so forth. Yeah. And everyone was related. We all knew each other. And that was, we played during what many consider the golden era of Hmong flag football. It was fun. It didn't matter if you win or lose. I mean, it matters, but it was fun to be at practice around your family, and you would have no issue taking a back seat because it's family, you know, as you root for each other. And that's what it felt right to be there. And when we disbanded, we had some issues in 2008, and I felt like it was, you know, time to end it there, end my playing days there. Yeah. And it just never felt right. I played with Black Venom. They were my close high school buddies. I played with them a couple times, but it was never right. It wasn't the same type of sacrifice that you put in. And
That's awesome. You guys totally has changed flag football. Can you kind of talk a little bit about, like, how has Black Venom changed flag football?
Well, within ourselves, we set the bar pretty high for ourselves. Like I say, every practice, we practice like it's a championship game. We want to practice against the best defense. Our defense wants to go up against the best offense. And we push each other. We feel like we can stack up pound for pound with the rest of the league and on both sides of the ball. So come practice, it's almost like a championship game for us, you know. And that's the bar we set, the standard we set. Guys come to practice knowing it's not going to be typical practice. Our practices are maybe, you know, a little more physically demanding. You know, there's time where we can pull you aside and coach you up, teach you up. But come, you know, with the atmosphere of our practices, a lot of time it's more, you better know what you're doing or you're going to take a back seat and we'll yell at you later about it.
That's pretty awesome, dude. I believe that is awesome that your team has a mentality to view practice like a championship game. This is awesome, dude. Really, it's the perfection, it's the professionalism, how you guys kind of set mentality on the team, on the field, to be the best you can. And a lot of teams, depending on the team, they may do this, they may not, but that's pretty awesome, dude. You know, is this something that has always been like a trend?
It started with success. I mean, when we first got when we won, we kind of coasted after that. And we knew that we had to step it up because we knew that we didn't want to fall in line with a lot of other teams. They've won and then they kind of fell off after that, or time caught up to them, and, you know.
Yeah.
But with us, we're like, we know we can do this for a long time. So we're going to just have to keep pushing. And it might have taken another loss. We had another big loss after winning our first time. And that's when we probably turn it up another level. When we didn't think we could. You know, we turn it up another level, and that's what it has to be. It just has to, you have to do it that way in order to be successful, because a lot of times we feel like we're targets, you know, like everyone's gunning for us, you know. It's kind of set that way, and so we have to always prepare for everyone's best. Everyone's going to give us their best,
you know? Yeah.
So that's just the type of way we practice. And it's been, we practice hard. We're pretty tough on ourselves, maybe the past 4 years, but definitely these past maybe two, as we've aged, we've definitely turned it up another notch.
Oh, that's awesome to hear, dude. I mean, like, you know, you mentioned about, like, back in 2012 where you guys won, like, the Triple Crown, mm-hmm. right? Like, the Memorial Day, the July 4th, and also the Labor Day. Mm-hmm. I mean, those three. Can you talk about your coaching philosophy? I believe that each coach comes in to coach a team with certain values, certain core values.
Yeah.
Can you talk about your coaching philosophy and also some of the values that you put in when you actually coach?
Yeah. Let's see. First off, my character as a coach, I'm just myself out there. I'm pretty laid back, pretty humble. I'm hardly ever too mad. I don't usually let my emotions get to me out there. My coaching philosophy, as far as like X's and O's, strategic wise, it's a little mix of everything. Our offense, and earlier you asked about setting the bar and standards and whatnot. Our offense probably, you know, has been, if there's ever a discussion about like high octane offenses and aerial attacks, throwing the ball, we're definitely in the discussion. As I said earlier, the golden era of football. In the past, when it was like, the competition was pretty even. Everyone was good. Everyone was physical. It was tough. The game was a lot more about man. You play defense, man-to-man defense. You run the ball. It's more like your household formations. Run formations, and the game was split pretty even between pass run. And I think when our time finally came, there was kind of it kind of evolved the game a little bit. We decided that our best personnel were, you know, all receivers. Mm-hmm. So we changed our scheme. You know, our scheme was kind of built around our personnel. Mm-hmm. So it was a lot more heavy passing than most teams did, and we were able to finally find some success in it, and it kind of changed everything. Now is I think teams are that way now. Mm-hmm. Instead of the golden era where you run the ball and you play hard physical smash mouth defense, you know, big guys just hitting each other, now it's about finesse. Yeah. And it's about actually showcasing talent in getting your best guys in the open field. And I think we really helped the game evolve that way with our system, and it's changed defenses everywhere now. Back in the day, like I said, it was either man-to-man or cover two zone, and now it's like, because of how I think of what we started doing offensively, everywhere now defensively, they changed the defense. It's now like a cover three defense. And it's to prevent the vertical offense. So teams are adjusting everywhere you go. It's 80% of defenses are cover three now.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know, and we're in a little bit transitioning, a transition of maybe going back to the basics a little bit, finding ways to, you know, the chess match.
Yeah.
So our scheme comes down to, you know, vertical spread and a little West Coast, and I mix it up. I'm very analytical in my philosophy. I like to break things down to scratch and figure out why this works, why that works. For example, like a mechanic, he's going to want to know what parts are where in the car, how it relates to this part, why it works, how, you know, at the end result, that's how you start the engine, that's how you do this or that. A doctor, he has to know tools, he has to know body parts. He has to know, you know, many other things, why it affects. I like to do that. I like to know. I want to know if this guy is here 2 seconds, 2.5 seconds after the snap. Where would the defense be in relation to him? Where would the other receiver be? Where would my running back be in relation? How would that affect the defense? I like to break down.
Wow.
And so my offensive strategy, it's the anatomy of the play. You know, you have to know certain receivers, why they're there. A lot of my offense is, it's half of it is pre-snap read. And when I say pre-snap, it's before you even hike the ball. When you line up, you know, you're going to read the defense, and you, depending on what the quarterback sees, he's going to eliminate half of his targets, half his receivers, you know, and it's like, it's a hybrid. It's very, it's a tough offense to learn, and sometimes just, it makes no sense, but like I say, there's always a madness to my method. There's always reasons why I want certain people where if you're 2 feet to the left too far, you're not going to be open. If you're, if you're 2 feet to the right, you know, you're always going to be open. It's certain things against, there's always a counter to everything.
That's, no, that's awesome. And, I mean, just a very simple analogy that I see is like, you know, just the NBA championship, you know, it's kind of interesting seeing like guys like, you know, Curry and Thompson, like those are guys, like jump shooters, right? Like, you know, they're pretty solid on like 3 points and like, you know, the jump shots are pretty solid, but you're absolutely right. Talent does play a big role in really winning games, you know, winning championships. Can you talk a little bit about your team as far as talent? Like, you know, you can have the best coaches around, but if your team doesn't have talent and chemistry, it's not going to go anywhere, right?
Exactly. Talent has to be the first thing. It doesn't matter what I put on paper. I can think everything out. I can have a play to beat man. One single play that will beat man, will beat cover three, and will beat cover two, whatever. It doesn't matter if the quarterback can't make that read, if the receiver, if he can't make that play, if he can't get off that jam. You know, everyone has to make plays at the end of the day. It doesn't matter whether you have a coach or not. It doesn't matter. You have to make, the playmakers have to make plays. And, you know, we've been pretty lucky. We've had some very good playmakers. I've got some of the better talents that I've ever witnessed. And that's mental and physical, you know. And it really makes it easier for me, my job. It makes my job easier knowing that whatever I put out there, they can get it done. And that definitely opens up many more possibilities for me. Like, I can get exotic if I want. I can keep it simple knowing that they can get it done.
I mean, absolutely. Like, you know, you look at the professional NFL, like, you see these top receivers. I'm not going to name any names, but you probably know who I'm talking about. Like, you know, they go from team to team. They're playing, like, you know, they're fast, they're just, like, elite athlete, but at the end of the day, like, you know, they can't, like, you know, either their ego's too big, or like, you're right, they don't have that mental game. And so it kind of, like, isolates them, but you know, kind of hearing about like Black Venom and the success that you guys have been through, the tough time, the good time. For me, it's pretty awesome to know that, you know, you built an amazing team, a team that is very talented, a team that actually listens, a team that is willing to kind of do whatever it takes for the team to execute and win. To me, that's pretty awesome, dude. What's your feeling around that? You know, knowing that you've built this team of like, you know, good foundation, solid football skills, like just a championship team, really. How do you, what's your kind of personal feeling of that? Like, are you excited that, you know, awesome that you've done this, or can you get a little bit of a glimpse to how you feel?
I think when it's all said and done and I walk away, maybe I'll take a little pride in myself, but honestly, I think I feel like I'm just another piece to our puzzle. There were many, many guys before my time who have helped build the foundation of the team. And it wasn't until, you know, I felt like they were over the hump. They just needed maybe one more voice to help them until I came along. That's when I came along. And so I take no credit and all that they've done. You know, there's, like I said, the guys spent many years trying to get to where I'm pushing guys right now to, but I think they deserve all the credit. They endured all the tough times, all the real dog days.
That's amazing to hear. I mean, just to hear your humbleness and like, you know, your character. I mean, that's pretty awesome, dude. Like, you don't know how awesome that is, but for me to hear someone that has accomplished so much and the lead of a team and really, like, saying that, like, you know, really giving really all the credits to the team. That's amazing, dude. You like, a lot of leaders, they kind of take, like, they have this egotistic view of, like, this is all my, like, you know, but to kind of, to hear a leader, to hear you say that, dude, it really touches me, dude. Seriously, it does. Yeah, no, it definitely does. Being a coach, are there some challenges that you face?
Honestly, a lot of it is, I mean, if you, for opposing teams, you just got to do homework. You pick up tendencies and little things. But that's comes with scouting. That's on your own time. The toughest part of coaching, I believe, is your on working on yourself, on your team. It's about the one of the tougher things is to keep guys motivated. You know, how to get guys to keep coming to practice, keep busting their butts off, whether they get no playing time or whether they play, you know, the whole game. That's the toughest thing, is to get them motivated, get them to show up every Sunday, you know, every practice. Mm-hmm. It's how to, you know, that's the toughest thing. As far as, like I said, X's and O's, it's on players, you know. Yeah. I put it out there. They do their own thing, and it's on them to really put that together, call, right? To make it work, you know. That's on them. I give them the resource, and they have to run with it, and they really have to make their own adjustments, and it's really on them. So my toughest thing is just, I mean, honestly, it's just to keep guys to keep believing and just to keep them their mindset on the same goal that, you know, we will get there, we can do it, as long, you know, as long as we stay together. And
that's awesome, man.
And another thing, trying not to outsmart yourself. A lot of times football, it gets into a chess match. You can't get cute. You can't get too exotic. You can't get fancy sometimes. And, you know, you really have... The toughest things are making these snap decisions in-game that can make or break a game, can change a game. Like, little things like you're a yard out, you're in midfield, do you punt, do you go for it? You know, little things like that. And you can't outsmart yourself. You can't outcoach yourself. So another tough thing... The next toughest thing I would say is really to get guys to believe in each other. Mm-hmm. If I choose to punt, that's because we believe in our defense. If we go for it and we fail, we trust that our defense will back us up. You know, getting guys to believe in that, because, you know, I make calls. You know, sometimes it's because all the time it's because I think it's for the best of the team. I'm not always right. But even when I'm wrong, I know that the team, they don't doubt my decision because they back me up, you know, so I have to have that faith in them as well. And sometimes it gets tough, you know, in certain situations in game, but we've been pretty fortunate the recent years not to have dealt with too many of those
situations. It's great how you say that, though, because, you know, just the last Super Bowl that, you know, I mean... You think about the Seahawks.
Don't get me started on that.
But and then when you, like, you know, that last call, you know, I mean, I think a lot of people weren't expecting that, you know. But I think in a lot of ways, like, after Pete Carroll came, he was like, you know, it was my bad, my call. You know, he didn't blame it on anyone. He blamed it on himself. And as a coach, you know, to have a coach like that, it's pretty awesome, dude. Yeah. You know.
First off, my view on that, real quick.
Yeah, my view.
I agree with the call. Okay, if you're at, like, statistics shows that there at from the 1 yard line out, there are more. You're more likely to fumble than you are to throw an interception. And if the team doesn't, if the other opposing team comes out in a run defense, the odds are with you to throw the ball 1-on-1. I consider you open 1-on-1. That's, you have to believe in yourself that way. The quarterback has to believe that the receiver's got to make a play on the ball. The receiver's got to know that 1-on-1 he can beat anyone. So I support the call, because statistically, again, 99 times out of 100, that ball is either caught or incomplete. One time it will get intercepted, statistically. So I agree with the pass. You can pass. If it doesn't work, that's fine. You have two downs to run with. You have, like, time to run the clock off. I agree with it. You can always come back to the run later. But as far as the coach taking the blame, yeah, he has to. We have to. because no matter whether the execution was poor or not, that comes down to us. If it was a bad pass, it's because we didn't coach the quarterback up enough to make that an accurate pass. If the receiver ran a bad route, he didn't attack the ball, that's us. We have to practice the way we want to perform. So if we want to make that catch in that moment, you have to practice that time, that catch in that moment, you know?
Yeah.
Honestly, that's how I feel.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a tough situation. It's a Super Bowl, whatnot. It's tough.
Yeah.
But props to the other guy, the other guy, the defender that ended the game,
yeah.
that interception. He made a hell of a play. That play, he'll never make that play again in his life.
No, that's
okay,
awesome.
I'm over it now.
It's awesome. No, it's see, I think one of the interesting about talent, as we talked about, is I believe you have an eye for football, how it works, because majority of the people, you're absolutely right, a lot of people said, like, you know, he should have run it, like, you know, Marshawn Lynch should have just taken the ball, but it's amazing how, like, you know, knowing what you know, your experiences and things like that, you know, you're able to tell that, you know, if you were in the same position, you'd probably make the same call as well, too.
Yeah. Some of my friends probably hate watching football with me, because, like, sometimes I don't want to watch the play. I watch the development of the play. I watch the opposite side of the field, be like, oh, you know, I would have done this on this, down at this. It's like, look at this, look at that.
Oh, that's amazing, dude. No, it's cool. So, a big question, and I don't know if there's, like, you know, any concrete formula stuff that you use, but what is the secret of Black Venom's football success? Can you tell, like, you know, I mean, is there a such thing as, like, this is a secret formula that you use to, or is there not, you know? I mean,
there's really not. Mm. I mean, football in its purest form is a simple game, you know? Sure, we make it, you know, very intricate and maybe difficult to learn, but there are ways in our system to simplify it. So when you simplify all those, like, distinct, you know, aspects of the game and intricacies, when we simplify it, once you get it, you will understand why it's so simple, you know? And a lot of our guys, even currently, a lot of our younger guys are all varsity players. So they come in knowing, playing organized football, knowing terminology, knowing concepts and schemes and whatnot. And then to just teach them, just to translate mine over to theirs, you know, it makes that transition easier. So mm-hmm. everyone's on the same page, but it really comes down to foundation, who you have there. And, you know, you have to, this is, you know, and this is probably going to be helpful for a lot of young teams coming up. You build your team on guys who are compatible. So with us, a lot of guys grew up together. We played together growing up, you know. We've plugged a lot of big pieces, guys who we didn't know growing up. But they've come in, they bought into our system, and they become family right away, you know. Guys have to be compatible. Guys that are genuinely similar personalities. The guys come from all different walks of life. But as far as football personality, they have to want the same thing. They have to want to work hard together. They have to set goals, you know, and actually list how they're going to achieve those goals. Guys who are willing to sacrifice together, sacrifice your time, sacrifice your bodies, you mm-hmm. know. Those who stay together, fight together, those who fight and struggle together and stay together will last, you know.
Yeah.
And it's sadly, it's like a couple, it's like a relationship, you know. You fight together, but at the end of the day, you know, you kiss and make up.
Yeah.
And you know tomorrow's gonna be okay. Mm-hmm. You know, and honestly that might be a bad way to put it, but football players are the same way.
Yeah.
You know, there's ups and downs. We went Black Venom, when they started, when I was playing with Mikos, I watched my buddies get beat up, literally, like 40-50-0.
Oh, wow.
You know, but after the game, you would notice things about them, like, man, we could have done this, we could have done that. And they didn't look at 50-0 as something to be ashamed of. They used they took every possible learning experience out of it, and they soaked it in, and you know they used that, you know, and through the years, you know, it's steady improvement. So guys were compatible, guys who were willing to sacrifice, stay together through ups and downs. That's the key. When you find those people, and of course they have to have talent, but potential only means possibly, you know, some guys with potential, they peak early, you know, and it's about finding guys who will gel together. And we've kind of hit, honestly, 2 years ago when we first won it, we kind of hit this block where we're like, man, the whole team is, we're all roughly the same age, which means if one guy, you know, decides to walk away, three guys are going to walk away. And if those three guys walk away, then take three more guys. And so we're all the same age, and this team's just going to, we're just going to flatline because we have nothing left. And then we, you know, we're able to find some diamonds in the rough, some outcasts, and who have potential. And with our system, I think they're really grooming to their own. And we've already labeled a lot of our young kids the future of the team, you know. And they remind us of ourselves back then, honestly. And we have a lot of handful of kids, a lot of kids who are shaping up to, you know,
into the future leaders.
Leaders, and they have all the characteristics that we built ourselves on and we need for the future. And
oh, that's pretty awesome. Dude.
That's what I want to build my team around. You know, of course you need talent, but guys who,
the mindset, right?
Yeah. Guys who are compatible, and that's on and off the field. A lot of these memories we make, a lot of the good times we have during these days, you know, a lot of it's off the field, you know? And a lot of these guys right now, we have a good mix of, you know, got veterans and really young guys. And it's a really good mold, and
that's really awesome, dude. Lonnie, you mentioned a little bit about, if I could summarize it, like the art of losing, you know, like, you know, taking a loss and really not looking at it as a loss, but also looking at it as a potential improvement, you know, I mean, taking that loss. Can you talk a little bit about, like, how your team was able, there are probably some games that you mentioned early in the discussion, you talked about maybe some close games that you guys lost by maybe a touchdown or a few points here and there. Like, how did those loss, like, what, as a head coach, what, as the head coach for Black Venom, what were some things that you did with those loss to really come back, like your mentality about those?
See, the really tough, the really big lopsided losses Black Venom have, that was before my time.
Oh, okay.
When I came here, they were already well on their way up, and I just, you know, come in and help them get to where they wanted to go.
Yeah.
So I fell upon a pretty good team. In my 5 years of coaching, I probably lost, like, I probably lost about 6 or 7 games.
Wow.
Maybe 8 or 9, but give or take. But honestly, I think all the games I've lost, I could have won. Honestly, a lot of it comes down to, I can go back to the film, and trust me, I've reviewed them millions of times. You know, I can point out many aspects in where we lost the game. Not so much how the other team won it. And credit to those teams. They played their hearts out to beat us. But, you know, a lot of things is you learn from it. And honestly, I don't think we've repeated. We don't lose games twice the way we lost it before. You know? And sometimes you shoot yourself in the foot. I lost a perfect game. That's probably one of the toughest games. It was 2013. In the middle year of, we won the 2 years before and after that year. But that middle year, on our way to repeat, we played TCF. They're a really talented team, a bunch of athletes. And I honestly think we played a perfect game. I don't remember if they passed midfield. We passed midfield. We got to the red zone about 5 times. We scored once. We had a touchdown taken away. I'm going to leave it at that. I'm not going to get the detail. Taken away. You know, it's like we played a fall. It's almost flawless game.
Yeah.
And then with 2 minutes left, they threw a like a deep ball. Like they scored on a it's like a 60-yard touchdown. And then they scored on a 2-point conversion to beat us 8-7. And they I don't think they passed midfield. One play pretty much lost the game, and that was tough. Like you can't coach it any better, you can't execute any better, and you still lose the game. That one was tough, and you know we kind of had this almost a meltdown. Like we didn't know it's tough. How do you learn from that?
Yeah.
When you did as much right as you could, and that was really tough to swallow. And you know I'm sure guys are still bitter about the way that ended, but the biggest loss. I remember my first year, July 4th, 2011. We played Aftermath, who's a really good team from Kansas City. And they came up here, and it was a shootout, just two spread offenses going back and forth.
Oh, wow.
And we scored with maybe a minute left or so, and it gets a little hazy because there's a little of a miscommunication I had there. But we scored to take the lead by like four. We're up four with the side ref. It's told us it was like a minute left. They run a couple plays. It's third down and eight. I asked the side judge. He says 49 seconds. So me trying to play the chess match against the other team, 49 seconds, I have one timeout, or no, I have no timeouts, third and eight, I'm at my own 30-yard line, I'm gonna pick up the first down, get out of bounds, stop the clock, huddle for next play, live for another play. So I said third and eight, I'm gonna play man press, I'm gonna force the quarterback to make a bad pass, early pass, maybe throw before his routes are developed. And the quarterback takes a snap back. I have everyone, a couple guys blitzing. He throws the ball, and this guy, he can throw the ball like 80 yards. He throws it 60 yards on a dot, on a Hail Mary. Guy catches it, walks in the end zone. I'm like, that's fine. It's a shootout. I believe in my offense. I send my offense on the field. I call the play. I send my offense out there. The head ref comes to me and says, game over.
Oh, no.
I'm like, I should have at least 35 seconds. He was like, no, that was the last play of the game. He was like, when that play started, you had 9 seconds. I looked at the other ref, and I was like, you said 49, right? He just looked at me, shook his head, and he said, I'm the side ref. I don't have the clock. He's like, I heard 49. That's what he told me. And my office is on the field in a huddle.
Oh, no.
And the ref's like, game's over. You guys lost. No. And I'm like,
Yeah.
And it's like, I was in shock. But that was the biggest learning moment. That was that tough loss I was talking about earlier. Yeah. In which, I'm like, I have to be a coach. I have to be better for the sake of the team. I put that on me. I put them in a bad situation. Mm. I didn't handle the clock correctly. I didn't handle personnel correctly. I didn't handle the play call correctly. I blew the game,
Oh, no.
And they did what I asked them to do. I told them to do. And I lost it for them. And that sucked. Like, we really felt like, we had a chance that year, And we learned from that. And we were hungry. We took that into a couple of tournaments afterwards. Finally, we played lights out a couple months later. Probably one of the best team to ever play Hmong Flag football. And they're probably nearing the end of days of their career.
Yeah.
But we went out there real, real hungry, real young. The team, we were still, roughly 20, 21, 22 years old.
Wow.
And we went out there and had a great game with them, probably the greatest game of our career. And
was that kind of like the turning point of like your team? Or
they set the standard, and wow, everyone chased them. They were like, if you follow the sport for many years, that they were like living legends almost, to see them out there, and they came out, and they're from Fresno, California. Shout out to them. And they came up there, and we just didn't back down. We didn't back down. We stood up to every challenge and answered every, you know, every time they swung, we threw a bigger haymaker.
Yeah.
And at the end, we, you know, were lucky enough to come up on top, and that's when we really knew, like, you know, like, we're over the past, you know. We learn from it, we move on, we improve every day, and aim for history, you know. That loss really, that loss in July 4th, the aftermath, really put us in a better place, honestly.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, I vowed to never be out-coached again. I would never be out-coached. I would never make that screw up, you know. And it really made me better at what my role was on this team. And then, you know, I'm pushing guys, and, you know, it stems from that loss. And
yeah.
Like I said, yeah, losses, you know, you definitely have to learn from it. You know, there are reasons why you win games and a reason why you lose games. It's not, and when talent meets talent, you have to find out where in the game, where could you have done something different to change the results. And we review our film. I probably spend too much time reviewing film. I'm honestly more worried about what we're doing wrong as opposed to what other teams are doing right, you know.
Yeah.
And it's you definitely have to learn from losses, you know.
Thank you for elaborating into it. And like all these motivational speeches they talk about, it doesn't matter how hard you get hit, it's how how do you actually get back up, right? And really, like, live life again. That's awesome, really. Like, to really hear, for certain success, to actually be successful, there's a lot of learning points along the way, but it's definitely good that Black Venom has, like, you know, has been such a great team. Really, like, the trendsetter for a lot of the flag football team here. You mentioned, you talked about, like, you know, younger teams and things like that. What about, like, you know, what advice would you give to like, you know, any rookie coach, like, you know, head coach of a football team?
It's tough. It's not going to be easy. If you want to, if you're going out there just to have fun and just, you know, anyone can do it. But if you're passionate about it and you really want to, you're really chasing something really big, you have to fully commit. You can't just commit one practice day, you know. There's every other day. It's about, you know, how to prepare for practice, how to prepare for certain teams, certain personnel, just building from within, you know. I hardly ever worry about anything I can't control, other teams, who you play, you know, whatnot. It's from within, you know. And honestly, you have to find a quarterback. You need a quarterback who is not afraid to yell and to teach at the same time. That's the key. Your quarterback, it doesn't matter who the captain on the team is, but the quarterback's the voice. He's the leader. He's the engine to the car. Without him, it's like, you know, someone's just going to have to push you down the road.
Yeah.
And it really starts with him. I've been really lucky that one of my best friends, Mike, our quarterback, he's probably one of the better quarterbacks to have ever played. And he's come a long ways, you know. And he's probably the one reason why I'm even here. It's because, you know, we played high school flag football together. And we kind of took that by storm. You know, we ran everyone over. And we said, how cool is this moment right now? And how cool would it be to someday win a July 4th, you know? And when I stopped playing, he tried to get me to come out there to play. And I said, no, I'm done. I was like, I play my family. It's not the same if I don't play without him. And so he's like, well, if you're not going to play, then come coach, come help. And I was like, coach? I was like, I don't know anything. I just play football. I don't know anything about football, you know? I'm a type of guy that's on the go, you know? And it didn't open my eyes until about 2010 when they picked up pieces, Mama's Boy, Wild Rice, even guy at Primetime, the guy they picked up, you know, a couple years back, Foo. Some of the household names that are the top of upper echelon of athletes within the sport, and I have them all on my team, you know? Wow. And when they picked those guys up, I knew that with those pieces, they had the pieces for it, but they were good, and I knew I could make them great, and, you know, yeah. Mike came back to me, he was like, I have the pieces now. He was like, and I know you're tempted now. And, you know, I was like, all right, I'm going to do it. You know, and that first year was a learning experience for me. Yeah. I was in worse shape as a coach than the team was as a team, you know. And I, you know, put myself through that. But I was blessed, like I said, with a great quarterback, you know. Great quarterback and Wild Rice, who handles our team on and off the field. We're a nonprofit organization. He handles the business aspect. You know, great leader, leads by example. He, you know, that guy has played probably every snap, both sides of the ball, every tournament, every game for the past 5 years, wow. You know? And he's probably the most single, most dominant player to ever play the game. Wow. And I'll leave it at that. It's up for debate, but there's no debate in my eyes. He's a great leader, great for the team. You need pieces like that as a coach. It just, without those, you know, and of course you need offensive linemen, and I have. Really great unit, one of the better units, and that right there, that's your foundation.
Yeah,
that's where you start your team. You need those guys there. Those guys have to back each other up, went right or wrong. Mm-hmm. When those, you know, quarterback, the linemen, you know, when they back each other up, everyone else will follow. So you have to find those pieces. Those are your. That's the cornerstone of your team right there. Every other skill guy, I don't care how athletic they are, I don't care how good they are, they come after those guys.
Mm.
Because that's where everything starts, you know?
No, I mean, that's definitely really cool. I mean, it's like you talked about, like, you know, you started back in, like, is it 2010 that you started coaching?
Oh, 2011. 2011, okay. 11, yep.
But, like, you know, one thing that a lot of young coaches and also mm-hmm. young teams should take a look at and should consider is you mentioned about the time, right? That it took you guys from very beginning to kind of get to kind of where you guys are right now. I like, you know, a time aspect and really connecting everyone, you know, I think is a big thing that a lot of teams may underestimate how long it actually took mm-hmm. you guys.
That's true.
That's definitely really awesome. I think one of the coolest thing, though, is, like, you know, I mentioned this before, but also I do want to mention again is with great team, there's always great leadership. And kind of elaborate more, but I believe that you have such great leadership within your team that you might not see it, but standing from the outside, it shows it from the execution of your plays, you know. It shows it from the execution of your team. The things that you guys do, a lot of it, as you mentioned, is very ad hoc, you know? It's like, you know, you might have the play drawn, but, you know, whenever the QB snaps, you know, like, it's like, hey, you know, whenever comes, right?
Yeah, we, and our veterans, our leaders of the group, they've instilled this within everyone, all the young guys too. The mindset is, nothing is perfect. It's not always going to go accordingly, but every time, We demand the best out of you. We demand your best effort. And if that's not good enough, then we'll go back to film and figure out, you know, why it wasn't good enough, you know? Mm. But like I said, sometimes other teams just make a better play. Sometimes things just happen. But at the bottom line is we expect the best effort. And, you know, from the top of the roster to the bottom of the roster, everyone, you know, they understand that.
That's pretty awesome. How many team members do you guys have on the roster?
Oh, man. Let's see. Throughout the years, there's been hundreds and hundreds.
Oh, really?
There's been, you know.
Like currently, I guess. Like,
yeah, you know, currently yeah. we, you know, there's, I'd say about maybe 35-ish, give or take.
Okay.
A few, but you know, our main core, it's a good, you know, like 25 guys, but you know, it honestly changes often, you know.
Yeah.
We're almost we're almost a fraternity here. It's like guys graduate and they move on. Yeah. And then we'll get these younger freshmen that come in. And they want to raise their ranks, so when they become seniors, they can, have the authority. And it's a really good thing because, you know, this way we make a lot of friends and we build a lot of relationships with people you normally won't get to meet outside of football.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, go for it.
So, yeah, like I said, we have a lot of guys come through. There's, you know, it sucks to see a lot of old faces go, but, you know, sometimes we get... It's good, also good to have new faces, especially the young guys, because I'm always on their butts about school and, you know, whatnot. And I like, you know, these young guys, they have a lot of passion. They were like us when we were young. So it's good to actually be able to hopefully coach them outside of football, too. That's maybe a new thing we want to look into is
how
to help, maybe helping the youth more than helping ourselves sometimes.
Yeah, definitely. So, about like different goals for Black Venom, like short-term goals. Do you guys have any short-term goals currently?
The only short-term goal right now is to win July 4th. It would be back-to-back for us. Only two teams have done that. One in consecutive years. Sandstorms and Lights Out, both from California.
Wow.
And more importantly, that would be our third. And no one's ever done that. I guess Lights Out did it. They won it twice, but their first time, they won it three times, but their first time they came up, it was their older generation. They came up with a different name.
Oh, okay.
They won the very first year. But, to win it three times under one name, three times in 4 years, you know, I mean, I felt like our legacy has been pretty good, you know. We never thought we would take it this far, and... to our accomplishments, and then going for three. We were happy with one, and now we have an opportunity to go for three, and that's the only goal right now is it's three or nothing.
That's awesome, dude. Any long-term goals at all for you guys?
Like I said, long-term goal, we want to keep this family like a fraternity almost, you know? Mm-hmm. We want these young guys to take over what we've put, you know, nine straight summers into. We want them to take over and, you know, carry on our tradition, our work ethic, and, you know, bring that into their next guys, their next freshmen, their recruits, and hopefully carry the name on, because, you know, it's almost become a brand in our eyes to us. There's been so many members that have come along and come through Black Venom that, you know, when we see each other out there, you know, it's cool to catch up. And there's so many of us that hope they can keep going. And more of the long-term goals.
Actually, you brought up a really good question. Yeah, like, go ahead. You talk about, I didn't ask it before, but like the origination of like Black Venom. Like, yep. How did you guys get that name? Like...
That was by Koo. My buddy Koo. I have no idea. I honestly cannot.
That's pretty awesome.
Honestly can't answer that. But definitely have to give them a shout out again. Koo, James, Johnny, and Chang. They were all varsity players for Harding. And their senior year of high school, they kind of, you know, put the team together and, you know, brought a bunch of us underclassmen. We were friends and brought us all together. And, you know, but they were the founding fathers of it, and no idea where the name came from, but
very cool. No, I was just
it's household now. Everyone kind of and they hate it or they love it. So.
Tell us how to actually get in touch with you and Black Venom. Like, you know, is there a way we could, if we needed to get in touch with you, whether it's Twitter, Facebook, is there like a good way for us if we had any questions, comments? Things like that to kind of check you guys out.
Yeah, you can always find us on Facebook. We have a page that we're updating quite often. We check in quite often on that. Just look up Black Venom Football.
Okay.
On Facebook. We have a website possibly coming out soon. It's in the works right now. You can check with the Facebook page. We'll update you guys on when the official site becomes available. www.blackvenomhff.com. We'll probably be, you know, more history on the team, maybe a photo gallery, highlight reels, maybe we'll update everyone on, you know, what's going on in the flag football world, maybe expand it outside of just us too.
So. Very cool. No, that's super awesome. Is there any if there's anything that you want to say on behalf of Black Venom or anything that you want to?
Yeah, there's a few people to thank. I thank Big Masta from Midwest Monsters for he's probably one of our sponsors from last year going to go into this year. You can catch them at www.monstasnation.com. You can find the website through our Facebook as well. MWM. They're our logo on our jerseys we wore last year. Small local business. And that's one thing we do on the side. We want to help other businesses as much as we can. You know, whether it's promoting or flyers and whatnot, we can help each other out. But he's one of the guys that helps us out. And he does a little bit of everything. Fashion. He has his own record label. He's got a lot of artists, music artists out there. He's got, he hosts some entertainment, club events. Okay. Yep. So shout out to Masta. I've got to thank the crew, our close buddies, always helping us out whenever we do events, fundraisers. Check them out. We have them on our page as well. They've got a couple of events coming up for before July 4th as well. Thanks to DJ Decon, the official Black Venom DJ. Thanks to Mr. Petey Rock, who is one of the voices of the team off the field with, just the business aspect. So, I got to thank those guys for helping us throughout the years.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. If there if there are a small business that wants to sponsor you guys, mm-hmm. would they just go ahead and go to your Facebook page and contact one of you guys?
Yep, message us on there. Hopefully in time they can get us on our website.
Okay.
We're always open to helping anyone. In the past we did a little it's a certain package of a sponsorship.
Cool.
Whatever you want to donate, and we're a nonprofit organization as well.
Awesome.
So, yeah, it can be worked out. We can discuss just what you want, what you expect from us, what we can do from you, and honestly, a lot of it's just comes down to loyalty. We just support each other no matter what, and that's what it is. And we have a handful of followers. The network is pretty big within the community, especially with social media too. We can help each other out tons.
Very cool.
The opportunity is always there, because my 5 years here, we've never had to ask the team to for money.
Mm.
We've always had sponsorships. We've been blessed to win tournaments to have money in a team account for us. Obviously, finding Sacramento takes a toll on you, but we're open because when we're gone, we want this for those after us, so they don't have to go through the tough times that we did. Of back then, we had to ask guys, we need money for water, we need money for registration, we need, and we don't want them to have to go through that. It should be on the team. Get hotels. Hotels have always been on the team for the, hotels. We help with gas money. All this. There's many different ways to be able to work with us.
Yeah.
Work with the team. It'd be nice to hopefully find some business partners out there.
Awesome. No, you actually reminded me, just a small point before we cut off is you mentioned about, I think a while back we were kind of talking about football and things like mm-hmm. that, and you mentioned about you guys, Black Venom, actually sponsoring a team, a younger team, to one of the tournaments and things.
Oh, yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about that? It takes a lot from your team to actually sponsor someone to kind of buy in for the entrance and things like that too. Can you talk a little bit about that experience?
Yeah, that was in Green Bay a couple years back. There's this really young team. I actually forgot the name of their team. Really young. They're all like 14, 15 years old. And before I even get there, Doc, who is a coach of Demons, and he's been coordinating flag football at July 4th for Law Family. This year, he is trying to introduce an under 18 tournament. So he's trying to get, promote with it for the youth.
Okay.
The team that we played against in Green Bay, they didn't have the opportunity to play against kids. They played against full grown men twice their age. And we demolished them. Like, it was bad. Like, it was bad to the point where we held up. We didn't even play football. We, like, had to just protect them at the same time. Okay. And they had a lot of heart. They got beat up. It was kids playing white shirts. They started the game in white shirts, and at the end of the game, it was all ripped in brown, and it's just they're just too young at the time.
Yeah.
And after that game, I told them, I was like, and after the game, they shook our hands, they congratulated us, and then they, talked about how cool it was that they got to play Black Venom. And I told them, I was like, you guys come back tomorrow, I was like, I might have a little gift for you guys. And so that night, I decided that I would pay for their registration for their next tournament. So the next day we came out and we saw them. They played their game. They had lost. They came back. They were, and like I said, all their shirts all dirty, ripped up, and young kids. But it was pretty cool to see, not see them get beat up, but see them, just laugh it out and enjoy the time, enjoy football, despite probably not even scoring once and probably gave up like 200 points. But it was cool to see them still, together,
yeah.
And still enjoying that time there. And so, I told them, I gave that money to the host, Dion, in Green Bay there, who's a great host. And I told him, I was like, I want to register this team for the next tournament, which was, I think, the Green Bay July 4th.
Oh, okay.
I want to register them. I was like, and just make sure they come back. And I told those kids, I was like, just make sure you come play, Like, we didn't have it. Yeah, and I don't want to spoil them because we didn't have anyone to do that to us when we were getting pounded back then. But I didn't want to discourage them. I didn't want them to give up because we didn't give up. I don't know what they're made of. I don't know if they have that in them or not. But I didn't want them to take these losses and then give up on the sport. It just, because it's sport. You learn a lot from this sport. You meet a lot of great people. And you learn a lot about yourself and your friends. And I didn't want them to give up on that. So maybe for one tournament, they might take another beating, but, maybe they'll learn from it. They'll stay together and fight through it like we did. Because, that was, I thought it was a...
I mean, to actually do that, like, to actually have a thought of, like, sponsoring another team, that's... That's totally coming from the heart, it's this other, you think about football, it's very competitive, everyone wants to win and things like that, but, you come from a different background where it's instead of, you see it as both winning, I mean? Like, really supporting them as a young team and really having hope and, and building their confidence and instilling them with belief and hope that they're able to do it. No, that's awesome, dude.
Yeah, I mean, get me wrong. Yeah. We're not angels or saints, We have our flaws. We have our moments, we have our moments on the field, but at the end of the day, the sport, it's about the sport, The sport itself, it's a beautiful sport. I'm glad a lot of, not just Hmong, but the Asian community is really letting the sport grow. Every tournament now is having flag football. The elder are maybe starting to open up to it, hopefully. There's a lot more youth, or Hmong youth, in youth sports, in high school sports, And, if the American dream is to be able to, live out your wildest dreams, make money, do whatever you want, and retire early, then, the key is education. And if we can get Hmong kids out here to get a free education via athletic scholarship, sports. Yeah. How cool would that be? You know, yeah, that'd be the coolest thing. It doesn't matter if it's Division I, II, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, if you can get a scholarship, you get free education, you've lived the life that many of us before, you know, would have dreamed of.
Yeah.
And that'll be cool. And hopefully, I don't know if I have that willpower to be a voice, but there are many guys out there right now, really good guys in the community who are going to be bringing up a lot of youth and being great for the community.
That's awesome. So you guys will be playing at the Hmong, the 35th annual Hmong Freedom Celebration Sports Festival at July 4th. At Como, right? This year, right?
Correct. Okay. Yep. We are reigning champs. Looking forward to repeating. It's not going to be easy. It's never easy, but we're as ready as we'll ever be.
Awesome. So that's going to be on the weekend of July 4th weekend. So it's that Saturday and Sunday. If you guys are wanting to come and check out Sid and also Black Venom, their team, they're going to be playing on McMurray Field. It's located right on Jessamine and Lexington Parkway. St. Paul, Minnesota, over by Como Park. Sid, thank you so much, really, for really giving me an opportunity to kind of get into one of the best coaches' mind, to kind of, like, see your philosophy, see kind of your vision as a head coach for Black Venom, and really see, like, you know, a breakdown of what is... Like, you know, how are you guys so successful? You know, that's super awesome. Thank you the opportunity for sitting down with me and chit-chatting. You know, that's super awesome. You know, best of luck on July 4th, 20, and also future events. This is Lee with LifeIsAwesomeness.com and signing off.